Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you've got a comment, go ahead and send it to me. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Be sure, once a month, cast your vote for the show on Podcast Alley, podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. And you can always give the show a call at 208-991-4783. Well, as we start the show, we've got a couple listener comments regarding last week's episode, The Big Odd. John writes on Facebook, when we all started driving, we used to close our eyes and see if we could tell where our buddy drove to. Was a blast. Sometimes we knew right where we were and sometimes not. Depended on how many turns and stops. Can really relate to this witness. Well, it sounds like as part of your coming-of-age driver experience, you also took some training on what to do as a kidnapped hostage. Hope you never need to use that, but that's far better than I could manage, and a good skill to have. Roger comments, just listen to The Big Odd. Love the shows that feature the crime lab like that. It's like a 1950s CSI. Exactly. And it's interesting to see how they were already using science in perhaps a less sophisticated way than you might see on CSI today to solve crimes. There was actually a book out. I've been meaning to get a hold of it. It's by E.J. Wagner called The Science of Sherlock Holmes. And in there, the author basically says that, from the reviews anyway, that Holmes and his contemporaries basically gave a lot of the ideas to how modern crime labs work. And here in Dragnet, we get a picture of how much progress had been made some 60 years after Holmes was written, as opposed to today. Anyway, Roger goes on to say, also hope everything is okay from the incident you mentioned in your intro. Well, thanks so much, Roger. We're definitely doing better. Our situation with a replacement car is settled. We got a nice car at a pretty good price. Of course, there's still some minor medical stuff, and then there's the insurance stuff to reckon with. Definitely some more financial parts of it ahead, but we're definitely doing better. Appreciate everybody's well wishes. Well, before we do get started, I wanted to share one more message. Ron writes in, just won a bid on Priceline going through JohnnyDollarAir.com. Hope it helps out with the podcast. Well, thanks a lot, Ron. It does quite a bit. In fact, we already see the commission for your purchase on the account. And I appreciate everybody who goes through JohnnyDollarAir.com and helps to support the great detective and Old Time Dragnet Show. Just remember to check JohnnyDollarAir.com first when you make your travel plan, where you can either name your own price or choose from published specials. And it definitely does help support our work here on this podcast. But we're going to get into today's episode of Dragnet, The Big Pick.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Bunko Fugitive Detail. An organized gang of pickpockets is working in your city. None of the victims can give a description of the suspects. There's no lead to their identity. Your job? Get them.
It was Tuesday, May 10th. We were working the day watch out of Bunko Fugitive Division, pickpocket detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from communications, and it was 11:14 a.m. when I got to room 38. Bunko.
Joe?
Yeah?
Anything come in from St. Louis?
Yeah, they checked the Carney's plan back there. No trace of Beck.
Tip was wrong then, huh?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Where to now?
Well, about all we can do is sit and wait for a reply on the radiogram. He's got to be someplace, and he isn't going to stop working. There'll be word on him somewhere.
I'll be glad when we turn the key.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir?
I wonder if you could help me.
Oh, we'll try, sir. You want to come on in? What's it all about?
I've been robbed.
Sir?
They took my money, all of it. Every bit. I don't know how, but they took it all. I don't know what to do.
Well, do you want to sit down?
Yes, please. I don't know how they did it. I tried to be so careful, but they took it all. 37 years doing without, and now I got nothing.
Well, this is my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday. Maybe if you tell us what happened here, we could help you.
Yes, maybe. I'm Louis Bonning.
Yes, sir.
I live at 1820 Woodworth Court, Los Angeles, 12. I have a room there.
I see.
$14 a week and privileges.
If you tell us what happened, Mr. Bonning, we might be able to do something for you.
And I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to think of what happened. I don't believe it yet.
Well, now, you said you were robbed. Is that right?
Yes. $5,200. All gone.
Well, were you held up?
No, nothing like that. If it was that way, I'd know. But just all of a sudden, I put my hand in my pocket to feel the money, and it wasn't there. Nothing was there. I had a pocket full of empty.
Now, sir, do you usually carry that much money around with you?
No, mister. I got it from the bank this morning. I'm going away. I was leaving Los Angeles. That's why I had the money, so I could leave.
All right, sir. Suppose you start right at the beginning and tell us the whole story, will you?
Well, my wife passed on 4 weeks ago, Monday, April 4th. Yeah, that's when it happened, April 4th.
Uh-huh.
We came to this country when we were both young. She died 4 weeks ago.
Yes, sir. If you'd go on about the theft, please.
Well, I thought I'd maybe go back to Chicago to live with one of my daughters. She asked me to come, and I thought I would, so I drew out the money.
You took the money out of the bank?
Yes, this morning. $5,200. It's what we'd saved. I couldn't leave it here in the bank if I was going to be in Chicago.
Well, you could have had the money transferred, you know.
Well, I guess that's what I should have done, but it's too late now.
Did you have the money when you left the bank?
Yes. I rolled the bills up and put them here in my pocket. Here, this one on the left side. I kept my hand on the money, so I knew it was there.
Now, what'd you do after you left the bank?
Well, I was going home. I thought I'd walk home. I went down the street, and then I thought I'd stop for some coffee. I was all packed at my room, so I didn't want to make a mess. I thought I'd have a cup of coffee out.
Mm-hmm.
I went into the big market. They have a coffee counter there, and I went in and sat down. All the time, I kept my hand on the money. I could feel it through the pants. It was in my pocket.
Yes, sir.
I had the coffee, and I went to go out of the market. As I walked through all the people, a box fell off a stack of boxes and almost hit me. I didn't think anything about it. Nobody was hurt. All the people in the market came over to me and asked if I was all right, but I said yes, I was all right. Then I went out of the market. I got on the street. When I remembered about the money, it was gone.
Now, it had been taken from you in the market, is that right?
Yes, mister, it was in the market, I think.
Well, let's get this straight. While you were in there, did anyone bump into you?
I don't understand.
I mean anyone jostle you, bump into you without reason.
No. No, I don't remember.
Did anybody follow you from the bank to the market that you noticed?
It was hard to tell, mister. There are a lot of people on the street. It would be hard to tell if there was anyone.
Yes, sir, I understand. But was there any one person you recall having seen this morning? One face that you might remember, maybe?
No, mister. I tried to think about it, but there's no one.
I see.
Do you think you'll get it back for me?
Sir?
The money. It makes a big difference.
How's that?
Before, when I had the money, I could go and live with my daughter. With the money, I could be independent. It would be a different feeling. You understand, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do.
That's why it's so important you get the money back, so I can go live with my daughter, so I can do that. That's the only reason I trouble you. The only reason I have to ask you to find the man. That's the only reason I got.
Well, it's a little different with us, sir.
Huh?
We've got another one. For the past several weeks, we've been getting reports of the existence of an organized gang of pickpockets working in Los Angeles. Contrary to most opinion, a pickpocket seldom works alone. Like everything else, it's gotten to be a highly specialized operation. Normally, there are several men to each team. The jug mob, who usually spends his time in banks looking for the victim. The shover, who pushes or bumps the victim so his money can be taken. And the wire, who does the actual pocket picking. In certain types of operation, the jug mob is replaced by the short, who works streetcars and spots people who have large amounts of money. Under normal circumstances, a professional group of pickpockets can take approximately $5,000 a day out of a tip or a crowd. 11:47 a.m. We had the victim, Louis Bonning, look through the pictures of known pickpockets for a possible identification of the man who'd taken his money. He was unable to find anybody who looked familiar. We told him to go home, and we said that we'd be in touch with him. 12:35 p.m. Frank and I checked back into the office.
You're rough one, huh?
Yeah, they all come out that color, don't they? I sure hope we can do some good for him.
Yeah, nice old guy.
You want to get in touch with Slim Ramos? Let's go down and talk to him. He might be able to come up with something.
Yeah, I'll get his number. I gotta get a new book. This one's getting almost impossible to use.
Yeah.
Look at this. Numbers all crossed out, you know, when they change the prefix.
Yeah.
Sure made a mess out of my book. Here it is. X-Book. 4. Slim Ramos there? Hey, Slim, this is Frank Smith. Yeah. Good. Yeah, say, Slim. Now, wait a minute. Now, the reason I called you, Joe and I'd like to come down and talk to you if it's okay. You gonna be there this afternoon? Uh-huh. No, nothing wrong. Just a couple of things we want to check over with you. Yeah. Okay. See you around 2:30, huh? Is that all right? Yeah. Okay. No, I know where it is. Right. See you then. He's going to be in all afternoon. Said he'd be glad to see us.
Good. Maybe he's got something we can use on this thing.
Well, he'll lay it out for us if he has.
Well, that's the one good thing about starting with nothing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We can only go one way. p.m. Frank and I checked out of the office and we started for Santa Monica. Slim Ramos had been one of the best pickpockets in the business. He'd been arrested and served a term in San Quentin. After he'd been paroled, he'd opened a small stand on one of the amusement piers near the beach. From his past record, Ramos had been cooperative with the police department and several arrests were attributed to his information. Ramos was operating a Wheel of Fortune booth at the end of the pier. Frank and I parked the car and walked out.
Quite a place, huh?
Yeah.
I gotta bring the kids down here some Sunday. They get a real kick out of it.
Yeah. That's Slim's booth there, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't see him.
He said he'd be here.
He might be around back.
Yeah. I'd sure like to win one of those hams.
Yeah.
Big ones, aren't they?
Uh-huh. Slim, you around?
Yeah, hold on. Be right out. Hi, Joe, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
I was in the back packaging some groceries.
Uh-huh.
What can I do for you?
I'd like to talk to you about a cannon operation.
Yeah, I should have known. Come on back here. We can sit down.
All right.
Hey, watch your heads on the counter.
Yeah.
Got a couple of chairs back here. Come on, I can finish up the sacking.
All right, go ahead.
Well, what's it about?
You got any rumbles about a bunch working the downtown area?
What kind of operation?
Jug mob.
Like I heard something about a bunch coming in from the east. KC, I think. Seems I heard they worked a couple of still dates with a carny back there. Boss didn't know they were working when he found out. He had them kicked off the lot.
You got any names for us?
No, not right off. Got to check around. Might be able to come up with them. What's the bit?
Yeah, they've been scoring good working the downtown area. Took an elderly man for his life savings this morning.
Uh-huh. Figures.
Huh?
They always pick on the elderly ones. Bump into a young guy might give you trouble. Pick the old ones, they don't seem to notice it.
Yeah.
How you been doing, Slim?
Oh, good. Got it real good. I ain't killing the world, but my rent's paid. I know there ain't going to be a fuzz on my tail tonight. I got it real good.
How long you been here now?
I guess it's been about a year. Thought if I could get permission, I might go out with a carny this year. You know, work the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Got a letter from a friend that's got a grind store, one of the big ones. He says he might be able to get me in.
A grind store?
Yeah, you know, everybody plays, everybody wins. Pay a dime to win a piece of slum worth maybe a couple of cents. Well, this carny I might go with's got no grift in the front end, all percentage games. Way I figured, if you go out with a good one, the weather holds, you're going to do all right.
You figure you can come out better than you do here?
Oh, sure. You see, we get a real good play over the weekends. Regular days, it's kind of slow. Go out with a big carny, you can draw crowds anytime if the weather's good. Bound to come out better.
Mm-hmm. You'll check into those names for us, will you, Slim?
Yeah, I'll make a couple of calls.
Can you make them now?
No, I have to get in touch with the guys tonight. I'll get back to you first thing in the morning.
All right, fine.
Same number, Michigan 5211?
That's right, Bunko Fugitive.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you a call. Buy you guys a cup of coffee?
No, thanks, Slim. We're just going to eat. You want to come along? We'll buy you one.
Okay. Now, hold on while I check with Harry. Have him keep an eye on things.
All right.
Hey, you go ahead.
Okay.
Now, watch the counter. I came up too fast the other day, like took all the skin off my back.
Yeah.
Hold on a minute. I'll be right back.
All right.
Nice looking place, huh?
Yeah. He's painted it since we were down here last time.
Yeah.
Well, let's go.
You painted up the place, huh, Slim?
Yeah, thought I might turn a bigger tip if the place looked good. You know, people like a clean-looking place.
How are the rest of the booths doing down here, Slim?
Oh, pretty good. I told you, great. Other times, a little slow.
Uh-huh. Any grift down here?
No, at least if there is, I haven't heard of it. Guy in the Santa Monica Police Department, Lieutenant Cunningham, he keeps the place real clean.
Yeah, that's right.
Last thing I heard about was a guy who was working with a camelback wheel.
A what?
Camelback. Like mine, only this was gaffed.
How?
Smoothest pitch around. The arrow is connected to a spindle. Spindle goes through a stand. Looks like it'd be no way to gee it. Plain pipe. Looks clean.
What's the gimmick?
Well, the frame rests on four pins. Pins are supposed to be what anchors it to the counter.
Uh-huh.
Now, three of the pins go into one piece of the counter. They really do hold the wheel in place. The other one goes through a separate piece of wood on the booth side of the counter. There's a space between the board on the booth side and the one the three legs go through.
Yeah.
Now, the pin in the fourth leg is loose. It's connected with a bunch of levers inside the pipe, acts as a brake on the wheel. All the operator has to do is lean against the board, and he's got complete control of the wheel all the time.
Well, that's a real nice deal, isn't it?
Yeah, the way they figured, it's perfect. In case they get a cowboy in the crowd, the mark can pick the wheel right up out of the counter. Shows that there's no wires running to it. The wheel's gaffed, and there's no way to prove it. Set it up with a couple of sticks in front, let them win a couple of times, you got it made. That's the way they figure it. Doesn't work out, though.
Well?
You know, like on my wheel. I got 120 numbers on it. Figure I get good action, I'm going to have maybe half of them covered. Right off, the odds are on my side.
Uh-huh.
Out of the rest, there's only one winner. Half of them covered means a gross of about $6. I give away $5 worth of groceries. Even with a winner, I come out every time. Percentages prove it. Look at it that way, you don't need a gaff wheel.
Yeah, that's too bad more of them don't figure it like that. So.
Yeah, I suppose. Took me a long time to find it out.
Yeah, but you came up with the answers.
I hope I can do the same for you on the cannon operation.
So do we.
It's funny. I get to thinking when I was working as a wire, how we figured that any time we could lift a poke from a mark was a big laugh. A lot of difference now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Now I sleep nights.
Nice. 2:15 p.m. We continued to talk to our informant, Slim Ramos. He said that he didn't know the name of the carnival the possible suspects had been fired from. He said that he'd call some of his contacts and try to get the information for us. We set up a time for him to get in touch with us, and then Frank and I drove back to the office. We contacted Captain Didion and made arrangements for additional men to be assigned to help us. Sergeants John DeBetta and Danny Gilmore were asked to aid us in a search of the market where the victim had been robbed. We spent the next 3 hours in the market looking at the crowd in the hopes that we'd see a known pickpocket or even see a wire in operation, but the surveillance netted us nothing. We made arrangements for the victim's bank to be watched the following morning. 6:15 p.m. Frank and I got back to the squad room.
Well, he sure does a good business, doesn't it?
Right.
The market, Joe. A lot of people go in there.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Well, I was just thinking. I guess it comes down to the point where the only way to hang on to your money is to carry it in your hand and keep your fist closed.
It's darn close. I was talking with Lieutenant Jack Swan. He was telling me a guy came in here from Nebraska, came in by bus.
Yeah.
He was sitting in the station waiting for a coach to take him up north. Had all his money in his shoe.
In his shoe?
Yeah. Had it in his left shoe. Had the money all flat so we could walk on it. Figured it'd be safe there.
Well, wasn't it?
No. Dozed off for a minute. Next thing he knows, the shoe's off and the money's gone.
How would anybody know where it was?
I don't know. The guy that took it found it, though. Guy dozed off for a minute, loses his shoe and all his money.
Anything turn up on it?
No.
Not yet. Bunko Fugitive Friday. Yeah. Yeah, Slim. Mm-hmm. What was that name again? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What'd he say about it? Yeah, wait a minute. Frank?
Yeah. Here you go.
Let me have a pencil. Pencil, too.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, Slim, go ahead. Was it with a K? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What? O-L-C? C as in Charlie. O-T-T. Right. You know where they're staying? Uh-huh. All right. Well, give us a call if anything more turns up, huh? Right. Okay, Slim. Thanks a lot. Right, bye.
How do you do?
Well, pretty good. Three names of the guys who worked the carny in KC.
Yeah?
Slim talked to a friend, got the information that the guys who work in the downtown area have been scoring real good.
Say where we could find them?
No, he's going to try to get the address for us.
Well, we took a big jump just knowing who they are.
Deal now is to make it work.
What do you mean?
Well, Slim says his bunch is pretty hinky. They're playing it real careful.
Yeah.
Word's out they got two more big scores to make, and then they're going to leave town.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Three names our informant had given us were Howard Kremer, Victor Leiden, and Edward Alcott. We had the names checked through our record bureau, but we found that none of the three men had been arrested in Los Angeles. We got a radiogram off to the police department in Kansas City, the last place the trio was known to have worked. We asked that all information on the thieves be forwarded to us. We also sent a teletype to George Brereton up at Sacramento, CII, asking him to check the names for us. The following morning, Wednesday, May 11th, we got word from Kansas City that the officials there were forwarding mugshots and descriptions of the three men. During the day, Frank and I met with Captain Didion, and a surveillance of the downtown area banks was set up. On Friday morning, when Frank and I checked into work, a special delivery letter was waiting for us. In it, we found the records and pictures of Kremer, Leiden, and Alcott. The pictures were handed over to the photo lab, and they started to reproduce them. The descriptions were sent to the print shop, and MO sheets were made up. As soon as possible, the pictures and the bulletins were distributed to all bank guards in the area. Additional officers from Bunko Fugitive were placed in the vicinity. Frank and I maintained a rolling stakeout in the downtown area. At 9 p.m. Friday night, the banks closed, and we'd gotten no report that the thieves had worked. Local broadcasts were gotten out on the men, but there were no replies. Monday, May 16th, the plan was put into effect again. No results. Tuesday, the gang didn't work. Began to look as if they might have closed up operations in Los Angeles and moved on. Wednesday, May 18th, Frank and I came back from lunch. I'll get it. Bunko Fugitive Friday. Yes, sir. That's right. Where? Right. No, don't do anything to let them know. Right. Well, let's go.
Some good?
The shover, bank guard, just spotted him. The call had come from a bank at the corner of 7th and Jackson Streets. The guard told us that he'd seen one of the suspects enter the bank and, under the pretense of filling out deposit slips, observe the withdrawals that the customers were making. It took us a little under 3 minutes to get to the address. We checked with the guard and he pointed out the suspect. Frank pretended to make out a deposit slip while I waited at the new account desk. When we entered the bank, the suspect was standing at the teller's window. In front of him was an elderly man. As the line moved up, the suspect began to examine the slip that he'd made out. Then, as the elderly man took his turn at the window, the suspect walked away and stopped by the door. He waited for the man to finish his business at the teller's counter. Then, as he passed through the door, the suspect fell and stepped behind him. Frank and I followed him down the street. As he walked through the crowds, he was joined by Edward Alcott, the shover in the operation. The elderly man entered a small tobacco store, and as he went through the door, the wire, Howard Kremer, joined the other two suspects. As the elderly man stood at the counter waiting to be served, the shover walked over to the magazine rack. He stood looking at the magazines for a moment, and then as he turned away, he seemingly tripped and fell against the proposed victim. Both Frank and I knew it was coming. We were watching for it, and yet we missed the actual theft. The wire moved in and removed the victim's money so fast that we couldn't see it. The shover took the wallet from the wire, and the gang was ready to move on. Frank and I stepped into him.
All right, Mr. Police Officers, you're under arrest.
For what?
Stop dreaming. You know the route. Now, come on.
Beat it.
Come on. Grab the
knife.
Come on your feet. Get up.
You're with me, cop. Leave me alone. You're going to regret this. Shoving a citizen around. No reason for this.
How about the other two?
They're out.
All right, let's get them downtown.
How about the victim?
No, he left when the beast started. Better try to catch him.
Yeah.
You're going to be sorry for this. You wait. You're going to be real sorry shoving an honest citizen around.
Yeah, that's the trouble with you punks.
What do you mean?
You're wrong on both counts. The three suspects were taken into custody and brought downtown. The victim's wallet was found on the person of Edward Alcott, who was identified by the owner and booked as evidence. 3:15 p.m., we took the wire, Howard Kremer, to the interrogation room.
Sit down, Kremer.
Yeah.
All right, you want to give us a statement?
For what?
Come off it. You know what we're talking about.
You got to have me cross with somebody else. I'm trying to level with you. I don't know what you're talking about.
You want us to lay it out for you?
I don't care much either way. You guys slam into a store where I'm trying to buy a pack of cigarettes, and all of a sudden I got handcuffs on. You tell me I'm hooked for being a pickpocket.
That's the way you want to tell it, huh?
There ain't any other words.
Your two friends tell it different.
What two friends?
Two fellas we picked up with you.
This is a big town, a lot of people. You walk into a store, you don't ask who's standing next to you.
They put the whole deal on you.
Who?
Leiden and Alton.
Never heard them.
How long do you figure you're going to keep this up, mister?
As long as it takes to get you on my side.
They don't bill days that long.
That's your loss. I'm a nice fellow if you take the time to get to know me.
All right, Kremer, this is way off the road. Now, maybe you got all day, we haven't. You can either give it to us here and now, or we can drop you into a cell and let you wait it out.
You put me in a tank and I'll be out in half an hour.
How many times have you been arrested?
Who says there was a first?
How many times?
You got the book? Look it up.
We ask you a question.
So I'm not a genius. I got trouble with addition.
Take everything out of your pockets.
What?
Come on.
For why?
Now, look, you're running out of funny time here, Kramer.
Then you better ring the bell, because I'll need more of it.
You got a job?
Yeah, I'm a president of a bank.
You're going way out on this, Kramer.
I like the scenery.
You work?
Yeah.
Where?
Around, no special place.
What do you do?
I'm a salesman.
What do you sell?
Whatever people can afford.
All right, now come on, put your things on the table right now.
You going to sign a receipt?
They aren't going to be taken from you. You want to see what you're carrying.
Okay. You boys deserve a break, but I'll tell you now, the numbers in my phone book are mine. Don't go near them.
Come on, get it up.
Here's my wallet. Handkerchief, comb, nail clippers, some change. A couple of ticket stubs from a movie. A lousy picture. Cigarette slider, that's it.
You got any money in that wallet?
Yeah.
How much?
I don't know. I don't pay much attention to how much I'm carrying.
You can't even come close to how much you got.
No.
Take it out and count it.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. All right. Comes out to $3,700.
You must do real good at that salesman's job.
Company pays big commissions.
I put the money in your pocket.
Why don't you put it in yours?
What'd you say?
Look, cop, I've been around. I've been with most of the carnies in the country one time or another. I know the score. There ain't a place in the world that the fix can't be put in. Now, why don't you just take the money? You drop it in your pocket, and I'll forget I was ever in here. Won't be nobody hurt. The old guy's maybe out a couple of $100, but so what? He won't miss it. Why not put the fix in? We'll both come out all right.
No, the fix just curdled, Kramer.
What?
You said we had the record when you called it. We got all the word about you. Way down the line, you talk about how you worked with carnies. How long?
Huh?
What's the longest time you ever stayed with one outfit?
I like to move.
Yeah, sure you do. That's the way the people who run the show want it. Decent carny doesn't want a guy like you around, you or anybody like you. You've been on the road taking money away from people who can't afford it for a long time. Now we nail you and you come in here acting like a big man. You do the indignant bit, and then when that doesn't work, you try to buy your way out. Well, you've had it, mister. We know it, and your two buddies know it. When are you going to take a good look?
You really figure you've got it made, huh?
We know we have.
The other two guys really cop out?
The whole thing. All comes down to how you engineered it.
You buy what they say?
We buy it.
Uh-huh. Then there isn't much more for me to say, is there?
Not a great deal, no.
Okay, let's go.
How about a statement?
Why?
Make it easier on yourself.
Easier if I cop out?
You know what I mean.
Yeah. All right. Bring the girl in. I'll give you a statement.
Frank?
Yeah.
You mind if I have a smoke?
What was that?
I said, you mind if I have a smoke?
No, go ahead.
Wild one, isn't it?
What?
Had it all down so pat. Good shover, better jug mop. I'll sit in the front row with any wire in the business. All that don't add up to a win.
Well, it's like you said.
Huh?
You got trouble with addition.
Howard Nathan Kremer, Edward Francis Alcott, and Victor Frederick Leighton were tried and convicted on 6 counts of grand theft money, and receive sentence as prescribed by law. Grand theft money is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of not less than 1 nor more than 10 years.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Welcome back. Well, we got a rare Dragnet fist fight. I honestly was conjuring up a little bit the scene where in the movie, the 1954 Dragnet movie. It's pretty intense for just dealing with pickpockets. And once again, we really get educated in the way of the pickpocket. And perhaps the most interesting fact here was Webb bringing out the fact that pickpockets rarely work alone. That went against a lot of the popular portrayals of pickpockets. Over on The Great Detectives, we've had a couple shows featuring pickpockets, and both worked alone. And in After the Thin Man, a pickpocket is featured as an old friend of Nick's, and he also works alone. From this episode of Dragnet, we learn that the Oliver Twist model for pickpockets was still in effect. The one part that was a little awkward was when they were describing how that crooked wheel worked. It really required a lot of imagination and some familiarity with the setup. So I had trouble visualizing that, though I don't know if being able to see it would make it any easier to understand. Once again, Dragnet fans find themselves indebted to the Armed Forces Radio Services, which without we wouldn't have been able to enjoy this episode, as the network version is not in circulation. Well, we turn to listener comments. Thanks, Adam, for your great commentary and show. I look forward to every week. Writes Courtney on Podcast Alley, and I love this show. Appreciate your votes over there. And encourage everybody, whether you leave a comment or not, to cast your vote for the show once a month on Podcast Alley at podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.radiodragnet.com. We're creeping up towards 400 friends, and we'd like you to be one of them. Well, our sound, it was done by Andrew Rines, and you can follow his podcast over at otrwesterns.com. Ken Carlin does our opening theme music. KenCarlin.com is the website. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.